Blog Talk Radio.
When you're down and troubled and you need some love and care and nothing is going right.
So have you ever felt that, like, nothing is going right? Well, cheer up. From Los Angeles, the big L.A., welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the caregiver's caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous worldwide blog talk radio network. Yes, folks, I'm the guy who's going to help you, guide you through this very, very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very, very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. It even sounds nasty, doesn't it? We have an exciting show planned for you today. Marianne Amon, entrepreneur, author, speaker, and life coach, and she's a caregiver. So stay tuned. I'm your host today, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring, selfless, sacrificial, and very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Folks, learn a lesson from the airlines. Remember, every time you board a plane, you kind of tune them out because you just don't want to be bothered. And then they try to tell you that if there's an emergency in the event of the loss of cabin pressure, this mask is going to fall out of the ceiling, and you got to put your own oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask. Sounds like a very selfish thing to do, doesn't it? But there's a reason. They know that you will most likely black out if you don't put your needs above theirs. And so you won't be of any help to anybody, and caregivers are the very same way. Now, on the show, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects it can have on us. It automatically throws us into this thing called the grief process. Ouch. Unfortunately, folks, there's only one way out of the grief process, and that is to go through the grief process. And hopefully we can help you through your own grief and loss if you happen to feel like you're stuck. Now, if this is your first time tuning in, you can learn more about me and my radio podcasts and my books and my videos by going to my website, DaveNass.com. That's Dave, and then the first four letters of my last name, N like Nancy, A like Apple, S like Sam, S like Sam, DaveNass.com. And if that wasn't easy enough, you can also go to the name of the show, which is DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com. Now, register your visit with me, and I'm going to send you two really, really neat gifts. First, a PDF copy of my book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. And the other one is a special report entitled 10 Things Caregivers Need to Know and Don't. So don't miss out on these cool freebies. All right, enough of that. I'm going to unmute my guest now, and I'm going to say welcome to the show, Marianne. Sorry I had to sit through all of those introductions and first-time caller stuff. Welcome. How are you today?
I'm fine, and it wasn't a pain at all. It was actually very interesting information. I love your energy.
Thank you. Thank you. You are so kind. I'll give you that $20 later.
All righty. I'll
so,
take it.
Thank you so much for agreeing to this interview. And I love your voice, by the way, and the energy and the positiveness. You just sound so nice and so calming. And it's going to be a pleasure interviewing today. And my listening audience is so lucky to be able to just sit and bask in your wisdom.
No pressure what there.
What an introduction. We set the bar pretty high, didn't we?
Uh-huh.
Well, Marianne, I can introduce you, but I'd rather you kind of tell us who you are. So let me just give you a general question. What exactly is your history related to caregiving? And go right ahead. The floor is yours.
Well, thank you for that. I want to just clarify, because I know your show is really about people that are in that very intense caregiving situation, but I know that you also talk to all kinds of people in all kinds of caregiving settings. And so I wanted to say that I'm not at the moment taking care of a terminally ill patient, or I'm not in charge of some of the things that I used to be in charge of, where it was requiring my daily attention. But I think that there's the caregiver is almost like the nature of a person. Certain people, there are certain people that have that caregiver, I don't want to say mentality, but that caregiver way. And I have to say that since I was a kid, that was me. I grew up with in a family of six kids, and my parents were, I was one of the oldest, second oldest, but my parents were had a lot of turmoil, a lot of chaos. They had marital difficulties, and many times there was a lot of violence in our home. And so I was the person that had to take care of my younger siblings, provide peace, keep things calm. My parents looked to me a lot for the caregiving of them, the children. But my parents also looked for me to caregive them because they had a lot of issues. And so
they were children themselves, huh?
They were children themselves, and they needed a confidant. So starting probably around the age of 12 years old, all the way into my 20s and 30s, my parents looked to me to be their confidant, whether I liked it or not. So I think that, you know, people who get in that position, people who need caregiving, find people who are caregivers, right?
Yes.
It's just...
And once a caregiver, always a caregiver, because, you know, God forbid tomorrow you could become a caregiver again, because life
Absolutely.
Is like that. It just doesn't know what's going to happen or when it's going to happen. And so you are a caregiver for life, Marianne.
I'm a caregiver for life.
Wear that,
that
badge proudly.
There we go. So,
wow, that's
yeah.
very interesting, your
but
history.
That's how I think I kind of started. And then I went throughout my life, you know, and that's what you say. You know, you get these different situations you're in. When I was a lawyer, and there's a lot of caregiving you do as a lawyer, and as a financial advisor, caregiving through that. And then I was homeschooling my kids and ministry. And I think the thing that happened to me in ministry is they say, there's a saying that says your gift makes room for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so my gift of caregiving, wisdom, impartation, listening, all of that came together, and my door would get beaten down and my phone rang off the hook.
Yeah.
And, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So when you...
I can't believe you were a lawyer. You are so nice. I mean, I don't think I know any nice lawyers. I can't even imagine what kind of a lawyer you were.
I was actually a prosecuting attorney.
Really? Got to be a shark, don't you?
Yeah. You see, I'm not doing that now, don't you?
Yes, yes. I can see the problem with being an attorney. So how long were you an attorney for?
Actually, they say you're always an attorney, right? So,
just like you're always a caregiver, yeah.
Yeah, it just kind of comes with it. But I actually practiced law for about 5 years, and that was all, and I went into business after that. And I worked for the state of Connecticut as a prosecuting attorney, and that was quite an experience. And you go through life and you do these different things that you feel that's the next step in my journey, and you realize that that was never meant for you to do, but you were meant to learn. It was an opportunity to learn. And so that's what it was for me.
There are always opportunities to learn. If not,
mm-hmm.
then you're dead. Check
your
pulse.
That's right.
I love that verse in the Bible. It says all things. And let me tell you what all means. All means all. All things work for good to them that love the Lord. He can take the worst bad that you can imagine and just turn it upside down, and it's become the most beautiful good that you can imagine. And I like to think of it as a tapestry. Some people don't even know what a tapestry is because it's
mm-hmm.
such an old-fashioned concept, but obviously the top of the tapestry is a beautiful design, and underneath
mm-hmm.
it just looks like hell. And so that's kind of how life is, especially.
All tangled.
Yes, yes. So go on. I know I interrupted you. Were you done with your thought? Okay.
Well, I think it was interesting because I wasn't really going to speak about being a prosecuting attorney, but as far as the part of my journey goes, you know, it was very difficult. Who you're caring for as a prosecuting attorney is actually the people. Mm. You're caring for the people of the state. You're caring for them as far as just getting bad guys off the street.
Yeah.
But the difficult thing for me was that you never knew who was lying to you and who was telling you the truth. So
yes.
You had to always make decisions. You know, do I plea bargain this? Do I take this to trial? Do I go for dismissal? What do I do with this when I can't tell if that person is lying to me or telling me the truth? And it's
Absolutely.
A very difficult position to be in. And
yeah.
I actually was an atheist at that time.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And one of the things being a prosecutor did for me was put me in such a vulnerable position that where I actually, all my intelligence, my education, my wits were not enough. And it set me up to actually have that come to Jesus moment.
Really?
And, mm-hmm. So it was, and that was quite cataclysmic. And so, you know, everything's useful, as you say, right?
Yep,
everything's
yep,
useful.
Yep. You know, I can totally relate. You know, I've got a cousin who's a drug addict, and it's like he lies all the time. It's like he
mm-hmm.
can't not lie. And
that
old attorney joke, and I know you're probably tired of attorney jokes, but, you know, how do you know when your attorney is lying, right? Do you know the answer to that one?
I don't.
When his lips are moving.
Oh, that's not nice.
But I know you would never lie,
nope.
even as an attorney.
Nope,
I'm
don't
sure,
need to.
I'm sure you've met a lot of attorneys that you wouldn't want to be friends with.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we won't go there.
No. And it's true of any occupation. I mean, we don't want to just pick on attorneys. Bankers are right up there, too. Oil companies, the whole gamut. It's because man is imperfect, right? That's why capitalism works, because it goes upon the premise that man is evil and greedy and he's always looking out for number one and he'll never share with his fellow man. The government has to come in and force him to share. And that's why socialism doesn't work, is because they believe that man is good-hearted and wonderful and kind and it will gladly share with his... Well, that doesn't work, does it? And it agrees with the Bible. Man is sinful and needs a Savior. Okay, enough of that. Don't get me started.
Whoa. But I would like to put a plug in for some attorneys. I mean, one of the things that's happened to me over the last several years is that I've just met some wonderful attorneys who actually assist entrepreneurs in ways that I had never seen before. So I even think sometimes that I'm going to go back and practice and help entrepreneurs, because I think that there's a whole another side to positivity in working
wow.
in the field of law that I never saw before. So, hey, you never know.
What a refreshing idea. Attorneys that actually help. That's great. I think the world is ready for that. You might just totally eliminate the attorney jokes concept altogether.
No, you'll still need them. At some point, you'll still need them. Yeah.
Now, I understand... Well, I understand that you've had about 3 burnouts / depressions, and I don't know if you already kind of went over that or maybe you touched upon it. What were the circumstances behind all of that?
Well, I did, and they were all related to caregiving, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
And I do have a very positive attitude, but sometimes I think what happened before I actually took on way too much. Now, you were talking at the beginning of your show about, you know, taking care of yourself first, putting that mask on first before you give it to the person sitting next to you.
Right.
Doing self-care, the whole thing about guilt and feeling like you're the last person in the world to get your needs met.
Right.
And I think that there were 3 massive energy stealers for me that caused those burnouts. And those three things were guilt. You know, you just never felt like, I never felt like I was doing enough. Even though my phone rang off the hook, and I actually worked in ministry or for my clients 24/7. I mean, there was almost no downtime for me. And I didn't think there was even supposed to be, because I couldn't get done what needed to get done in the time I had. So my husband and I always took Friday nights off, but that was it. The rest of the week I was working. The second thing was resentment, because after you're doing so much for so long, you start to feel like you're the only one doing anything. You lose total perspective, right?
Yeah.
And that's what was happening. You know, I just lost total perspective. If somebody had eventually got to the point where if you had a need, I could smell it and I'd run the other way.
That's funny.
Couldn't even, and I didn't even care anymore, you know. But I think the feeling that if you don't keep it up, you're going to let people down. Something bad could happen. What if that person goes and harms themselves in some way, or they get hurt in some way because you're not attentive enough?
Mm-hmm.
You know, all those things are constantly swirling around.
Right.
And the third energy stealer was that I never took time for just fun. I'm a person I recognize in my life, and I have no qualms about saying this. If I'm not having fun, I'm not very good.
Wow.
I can't do very good. I have to. And I recognize during those burnout periods, every single time, it was work, 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 responsibility, responsibility, responsibility. Not enough time, not enough time. And there was just, I didn't feel like I had time for fun. I didn't think I deserved it. There was always something that was standing in the way. And I had to be honest with myself and say, if I'm not having fun, at some points, even in a day, I always try to have fun. I have to have fun.
Yeah.
Fun is my fuel.
And for those of you who don't know Marianne personally like I do, I mean, you see her picture on the advertisement. I laughed. I told her the camera loves her because she looks so great. But that's not her camera face. She is like that all the time. I have never seen her not smiling. I mean, I see her eating and she's smiling when she eats and stuff like that. So
food
I can't even
out of my mouth.
And she's funny too. But
in those
days when you were having your burnouts, I guess you were not that happy person who went around with a smile on your face all the time, right?
No, I was actually, you know, get too close to me, I might punch you.
Mm-hmm. Wow, mm-hmm. It's like night and day. Who is that person? Who is that man? So what did you learn from all of this? I mean, and where was God in all of this?
Well, it's interesting. One of the things I did learn is that the world will go on just fine if I'm not involved in everything. And that was a huge thing. I also learned that I could withstand people's disappointment. I hated people being disappointed in me or me letting them down. But I realized that I could take it. If you're disappointed in me, oh, so be it. And I never thought I could get to that point. So I was fine about that. And the interesting thing about God is that I relied on God every single day, but my perception about God and what he expected to me actually decreased my energy and depressed me more than helped me.
Mm.
Because I believed wrongly that he wanted me working 24/7. I believe that he's a taskmaster. And he gave me all these gifts and skills. And at first I was happy to use them all for him and for his glory and to help his people and so forth. But after a while, I started to feel like he was just using me and abusing me.
Wow.
And he was letting me down, and I started shaking my fist at him, like, where are you? Why am I so exhausted all the time? You're supposed to be supplying whatever I need. I'm working like a dog. Where are you? You know? And there's that one passage in Isaiah 40 where it says that you shall walk and not grow weary. You shall, you know that one.
Let not be weak, yeah.
Yeah, and you would soar on eagle's wings.
Right.
And next to that Bible verse, I put the word, oh, yeah, sure. And so
funny.
For me, God actually added a burden to my life. But what happened, what got tweaked after that, and what I learned was that I had a false perception of him, his love, and his expectations.
Yes.
So
yes, yes.
That's what got cleared up for me. And after
this is so important for you to communicate this, because everybody thinks that, you know, God's up there with his scorecard, and if you do good and you obey the laws of the Bible, that you're going to be blessed, and if you're not, then you're going to be punished. And, you know, God doesn't love you any more if you do everything right, and he doesn't love you any less if you do everything wrong. He just loves you unconditionally.
Absolutely. Unconditionally. Yeah. And
that's such a burden off your shoulders when you realize that, too. And that's what it sounds
it
like you're saying.
Yeah, it was absolutely like that. And I started through him. I had to repair and restore that relationship in a new light. And that's one of the things he showed me, is I made you, Marianne, to be a person who needs fun. And that's how that started to open up for me. And taking care of myself and him taking, allowing that and blessing me and all that in other ways was just very instrumental to my healing.
Wow, wow. What a mm-hmm. great lesson. We need to take a break, Marianne, and we're going to come back. And don't go away, folks. We will be right back.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships. Available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Hear what Lynn Barrington, best-selling author of Daddies and Daughters, published by Simon & Schuster, has to say about it. You think you have it bad? Read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you will be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy Award winner, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch? This book will be an encouragement to anyone who reads it. Charlene just won't let the promises of God go. She's hanging on to her positive, godly attitude, and I look forward to the day when she will receive all that she's believing that God will do for her. In the meantime, she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. Her smile has gotten just as big as it was before her stroke. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. I'm glad to know her and her testimony. Read this book. You will be encouraged regardless of what you're going through. So get your copy of One Arm, One Leg, and 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. But if you purchased it from the author's website, Dave and Charlene Nassani will personally autograph your own copy. Just go to DaveNass.com. That's Dave, and then N like Nancy, A like Apple, S like Sam, S like Sam.com. DaveNass.com. Oh, and while you're on his website, don't forget to leave your name and email address so that Dave can send you his free report, 10 Mistakes All Caregivers Make That You Shouldn't, just for visiting the site. There are a lot of resources, videos, and links to his radio podcast. Again, DaveNass.com. That's NASS. Now let's rejoin Dave Nassani and his guest on Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Program on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.
And we are back with Marianne Amon. And what a pleasure to have you on this show, Marianne. You are so knowledgeable and so wise. And thank you again for doing this interview. You are still there,
my
right?
My pleasure.
Hopefully you finished your thought on that last segment. I'd like to move on to some other questions that I have here. What form did your personal struggles take on while your mom battled cancer? Because you told me she was battling cancer and later dying in 1991. So what forms did your personal struggles take, especially with God and stuff? I know you touched on some of that, some of those issues that you had with God. But go ahead and see if you can answer that.
Well, sure. My mom did battle cancer for almost a year. She had had it for probably a couple years prior to that, but it wasn't caught. And so she had lung cancer. And so fortunately, I do have other siblings, and we all took turns staying with my mom and helping her through that. Obviously, we didn't know that she would ultimately pass away. So, you know, there's always that when you're serving and loving someone that you care about, and you don't know what the ultimate outcome is going to be. But the other difficulty, though, was in my own relationship with my mom. And I know sometimes people have to get into positions with parents where they are taking care of them and they don't have resolved issues. There are certain things that are still, you know, hanging in the air. Maybe you coped with a relationship before with them, or you could distance yourself from them in some way. But now there you are, having to take care of them at such an intimate level. And mostly my mom and I had, you know, taken care of whatever issues and difficulties I had with her, she had with me as I was growing up. But there were still some things that were not fully resolved. And my mom she was a very, very demanding person. And so you know how it is, Dave, when somebody is so focused on their illness, they don't think about other people too much. You know, they're so focused on, and that's what,
well, they become self-centered, and that's just
totally.
That's normal. It's natural. The world revolves around them. It's all about me. It's all about me. It's all about me. And just don't take it personally.
Exactly. And it's hard to not take it personally at the time, you know. So one of the things that I don't know if somebody, other people have this issue sometimes, but my mom would, you wake up, you go down with her, and she starts spewing off the list of everything she wants done that day.
Yes.
And none of it
that
she can do
well.
For herself. Yeah, I bet you do. I bet you do. And I know everybody's got different responses to that, but hers was like, she'd get angry with you if you didn't accomplish everything within the first 5 minutes. And I didn't get it. I didn't quite get that that's what was going on. And all I kept, and I had two little kids at the time, too. My kids were little. So I didn't know how to accomplish it all. So I was starting to seethe inside because no matter how hard you tried to work for her, it still didn't seem like it was enough. And I remember one night I was sitting. And she always liked us, after I put the little kids to bed, she always wanted me to sit with her, hold her hand, and watch TV with her till she fell asleep. And, you know, it's kind of hard to hold hands with somebody that you're mad at.
Right.
And I would sit there holding her hand like, I don't want to do this. I'm so mad at her, you know. And then you feel guilty feeling that way because you don't know how long that person's going to be around, you know.
Right. I call that the Fred Sanford syndrome. Remember him on Sanford and Son? How he would get his son Lamont to do anything he wanted for him. He'd look up to heaven, hold his heart, said, "Elizabeth, I'm coming for you, honey."
Exactly.
And he's, "Oh, Dad. Okay, what do you want?"
Exactly. And I felt that way. My mom was like that a lot all the time anyway. She used guilt a lot to guess what she wanted, you know. That's why when you say you're immune to guilt, sometimes I am. But that night I went to bed and I cried out to God. And I just was like, I don't know how I can do this. I don't know if I can keep doing this. You know, she makes me crazy. And yet I'm scared about her passing away or not doing a good enough job. And I just like, you got to help me out here. And it was so interesting because in the morning I woke up and I actually got a strategy.
Really?
And so that's one of the things I learned was that God gives me strategies. God gives us strategies to do some of these things. And it was so simple. I don't even know why I didn't think of it before. You want to hear it?
Yes. First,
find
I want to know.
You do all
first,
the time.
First, I want to know. First, I want to know. How long after your conversion from atheism did this kind of take place?
9 years.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. So I had been a Christian for quite a while, but, you know, it's kind of like a crooked, jagged road, my life as a Christian. So, but with my mom, so that morning I woke up and it dawned on me and I just said to her, what I'm going to do is I'm going to write down everything you want me to do today, and then we're going to prioritize it.
Mm.
And I have to throw in there feeding the children. And as soon as I said that, it was all of a sudden she looked up at me and her eyes were wide open, and she realized I had other things to do besides her as well.
Yeah.
And she got a chance to tell me what she wanted doing first, second, and third, rather than heaping it all on you at one time. And just that really little teeny thing. And then that that little thing, she then says to me, feed the kids first.
Oh.
So she stepped outside of herself. We made the list. We got our things prioritized. And, you know, sometimes, you know, I didn't even think she was capable of that. But
well, she remembered she was like a grandmother.
Exactly. So, like I said, it was just a little thing, but it saved my whole the whole rest of the time I was with her.
You're right. That's so simple. You should have thought of it yourself.
I should have.
Sounds like a line from The Wizard of Oz. I should have thought of it with my brain. No, I should have felt it with my heart. No, she had to feel it and experience it herself. Well, thank you for telling us what you learned, Dorothy. Yes.
Yep. I'm tapping my little red heels right now.
Oh, amazing. So tell us about your life. Let's fast forward to your life today. I understand you have many clients and people to care for and things to attend to and people to see and places to go. Tell us what's going on in Marianne's life.
Well, I do. I do. And I think one of the things that it started me slow, I have a coaching business. I speak. I do training, workshops. And I think I started off kind of slow because I was really scared of the onslaught of people. I wasn't sure, is this something I can really handle, or am I going to get buried once again? Because that seemed to always happen to me.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they talk about fear of failure, and then they talk about fear of success. Mm-hmm. I had both. And so it is quite wonderful when you do get a full load of clients and you have people asking you to speak and to write for things and contribute for this and that. But I take the lessons I learned from my burnouts, and I apply them to today so that I kind of always feel like I have more than enough of whatever I need, whether it's time, energy, money, ideas, whatever. And so I have to walk around. I take the time now every morning. I spend time with the Lord. I regroup. I get my strategy sessions, my solutions, whatever resources I need, people to come into my path. But I'm going to tell you the most important thing that I have learned that saves me and fulfills me is favor, the favor of God. And I took about a year just studying, basking, getting a deeper and deeper and deeper understanding of favor. And I can't think of anything that's more revolutionary. I really can't.
And for those of our audience who don't know what favor is, just kind of briefly explain, what are you talking about?
Well, favor is, I mean, I think we all know favor from, you know, when you get preferential treatment. Those are the common ways. You know, somebody does you a favor, all right?
Right.
And that's a little nice thing. Somebody, favor always carries something good. So you think of, oh, gosh, you know, isn't that nice they did that for me? They did me a favor. Sometimes people favor you at work. I have favor in the mastermind. I have favor with you, don't I?
Yep.
So when you have favor with people, there's just this natural desire on their part to look upon you kindly, to do things for you, to help you out, to bless you, to provide. Mm. I mean, it's all of that.
With no ulterior motives. This is, there's no payback is expected, you know, like the world's favor. Okay, well, I did you a favor. Now you got to do me a favor. None of that.
Exactly.
It's godly favor.
Yeah, and godly favor is just really cool because it goes. There's enough for everyone. You don't have to earn it, and you just have to receive it, and you can pass it on. You could give
yeah.
it away because there's yeah. so much more of it.
Yes,
and
yes,
so
yes.
when you, that smile you see all the time is really because I am so aware that I walk in favor and I have favor to give. And the cool thing, too, is that a lot of times when I'm working with people, just naturally they get more favor in their life.
Yes.
When I talk to
yes.
people, they get more favor. It just keeps getting passed on. And it's like the least amount of work you could do for anything. Awesome.
Well, it sounds like you already answered my next question. What do you look to God for? Obviously, favor. Is there anything else?
Yeah, I do. I look to God for, well, we touched upon this already, too. I look
yep.
to God a lot for my strategies and my solutions.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I look to Him, you know, for abundance. A lot of times I don't feel like I have enough time. I can get into the mindset, I don't have enough time. I don't have enough time to accomplish what I need to accomplish. And you know
mm-hmm.
that passage in John 10:10 where He says, I have come to give you life and to give it more abundantly?
Yes.
I think that about time, too.
Yes, time is the enemy here on earth. And I know God is not concerned about time because 1 second is like 1,000 years to Him and vice versa. But I wish I could get more control of the time. And I think that's what you do in your coaching sessions, right?
Well, I do. And yet I ask God to maximize my time, too. Because like
mm-hmm.
you said, you know, one time, He's a multiplying God. So if I take all these tasks I have to do, and maybe normally it would take me 3 hours to do them, when I rely
mm-hmm.
on God for that abundance and that multiplication factor, I can usually get in 3 hours worth of work done in 1 hour.
That's right.
It's a high efficiency thing.
And I've always heard it said that if you give God the beginning of your day, some people wake up and say, I don't have time to spend with God because I have too much to do. And another person might wake up and say, I have so much to do today, I have to spend time with God so I can get it all done. And it's
Amen.
Just a mindset.
It is. It and is.
It sounds like you're the latter of those two.
Yeah, I do. I depend on that. And today I even posted, too, another time multiplier is gratitude. You know, I started off actually this morning just feeling this heavy weight of all this stuff I got to get done because I'm going to be gone to California for about 3 weeks. And
yay.
yeah. But and I have somebody here helping me declutter my house, and we're working on systems in my house. And then I've got all these other things to do. So I got a little overwhelmed when I started this morning. And as soon as I just started writing to the Lord about what I'm grateful for, it's
mm-hmm.
like it all diffused. I got clarity. I sent you my questions right away.
Which I appreciate. Thank you. But it's a humbling thing, too. I mean, you are a very humble person. I mean, you don't go around saying, look at me, I'm great, I'm good looking, I'm smart, I got it together, I'm successful. No, because that turns people off. You are so humble, and humility draws people to us. And
wow.
Obviously, I believe all that humility comes from God and the gratefulness.
Well, I think so. You know, at my age, Dave, you stop
mm-hmm.
you realize how much you need outside sources and how available, and it's okay. You don't have the pride issue; isn't as big a deal. Have you noticed that?
Well, I've noticed it because I'm 60, but you're just a kid. I mean, how old are
yeah.
you? Come on.
I'm 62.
Get out of here! Are you really?
I am.
My gosh.
I'm 62.
How do you do it? Tell us
yeah.
what your diet is so that we can all look like you.
It's not my diet. That would be kind of horrifying, no.
Well, you look
amazing.
You
don't want to know what I eat.
Well, listen, this seems like a good time to take a break, so we will be back, and don't go away.
Tune in to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver program every Saturday at 3:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, only on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. The whole purpose of this show is to help support you in your caregiving responsibilities so that you take care of yourself first, so that you don't burn out, because your loved ones are counting on you to take care of them. and Dave Nassani should know. He's been a caregiver to his wife for over 19 years after she suffered a debilitating stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on her right side. After a 2-year grieving period, she came to the realization that she had to play the cards that she was dealt. And so she decided to reinvent herself and attempt to do all the things that she was famous for doing before her stroke, like gourmet cooking, hosting dinner parties for 12, interior decorating, sewing, and too many other hobbies and activities to mention here. She now basically makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers by continuing to do almost everything she did before her stroke. But in essence, she does it with one arm and one leg tied behind her back, and she might as well have duct tape over her mouth too, since she can't speak. And she does it all with her amazing positive attitude and smile. So what's your excuse for not playing the cards that you were dealt and turning those lemons into lemonade? Dave has been so inspired by Charlene's attitude that it inspired him to reach out to caregivers by writing 3 books and starting this radio program to make sure that caregivers have a place to go to get the support that they need in order to avoid burnout and to get through the grief process. Now get ready to learn how you can avoid burnout and survive grief. It's Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. And here again is your host, Dave Nassani.
And we are back. And I just love listening to that commercial about my wife. She is so amazing. Have you had the privilege of meeting her, Marianne, at a mastermind?
You know, I did once. I think the very first time I met you. And she is beautiful. She's delightful. She shines. Oh, my gosh. She is radiant. She really is. She's radiant.
I know, like, right? And here's
I know.
A woman, she cannot speak, but she can communicate. Her
Absolutely.
Her right side of her body doesn't work, and you would not know it by looking at her because she, like, dresses to the hilt like the Queen of England, and
mm-hmm.
she just shines. She radiates. So, like I said, she makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers. I mean, I get no sympathy from her at all. I broke my ankle in a bike accident. For a year and a half, I'm limping around, complaining, whining, suffering, and she just looks at me and says, yeah, try living 24 hours in my shoes, buddy. What are you complaining about? And, you know, it just kind of shuts me up. And thank God for these reminders that God puts in our path.
mm-hmm.
This other guy, Nick, whatever his last name is, born without limbs, arms, or legs, you know, and the guy is just conquering the world, finds a beautiful woman to marry, has a worldwide
mm-hmm.
ministry. I mean, what is our excuse for not doing what God has created us to do? Everyone has a purpose in life, and these people as well, you and I as well. So, you know, there are no excuses. No excuses. I'm sorry. Do I get an amen on that?
Yeah, you get double amens. You're absolutely right. I think that that's part of what I actually do with people is helping them to find their purpose and to get rid of all those blocks and obstacles. And let me tell you, Dave, you're speaking truth. There are so many people that feel so obstructed and so blocked from accomplishing what it is that is their great work or the thing that they're here on earth to do. And, you know, every one of us has got this magnificent core inside of us, and we're all here. Sometimes I say to myself, we can't have lives that mean nothing. God would never do that. He would never create
right.
somebody to have a life that has no meaning. He just wouldn't.
Right.
So we can get rid of that idea. But,
you know, there was an old Disney movie a long time ago about two sisters, and somehow they were able to switch places. I forget the name of it. But I
Parent
just
trap?
Wish, yes, I just wish that I could trade places with some people. They, you know, I coach a lot as well, and people come to me with their problems, and I tell them what to do, and they don't do it, you know, and they try to do it, and they're just weak, and they have no discipline, and no confidence, and I says, you know, if I was able to go into your body, I could straighten my life out in 24 hours. Why can't you do it? All you got to do is say the right thing, do the right thing, and exude a confidence. And I just don't get it.
Well, I'll give you one clue. That used to happen a lot to me until I started charging more money. There is something that people who, and I'm not, this isn't about the money. It's about investment. You know, working with people who have skin in the game, right?
You mean somebody who pays for your advice is more likely to accept it and do it as opposed to a freebie?
Well, that's kind of in my experience.
Imagine that. Thank you. I'm going to write that down, Marianne. So,
yeah. I never thought it was true. I thought it was just something that people who make money just say because they wanted more money.
Now, I have a good friend, and we all have mentors that we go to when we need advice, and we have people who come to us for advice who we mentor. And that's the way it should be because, you know, everyone is at a different level. And one of my mentors told me at a time when I was losing all of my life savings, several years ago now, it's been about 5 or 6 years ago now, and when everything melted down, the stock market and the real estate market, never happened in history, but I saw my wealth evaporate. And so, I was a little strung out at that time, despite my positive attitude normally. And he said, Dave, there's nothing that you're going through that somebody who is wiser than you could take over your life, take over your circumstances, take over your bills, take over your debt, and they can get out of it because they have a vision that any situation is doable. Any problem can be solved. So don't sit there and think that this is an impossible situation, that there's no way out. I know five people right now who, if they swapped places with you, like a Monopoly game, right? You ever played Monopoly and you're almost bankrupt and someone says, well, let me take over your hand. And, 30 minutes later, they own the whole board, It's like,
oh, it's maddening.
And it's all about attitude and mindset. If you think you can, you can. If you think you can't, you can't. And, I don't want to simplify it, but it's kind of simple. It just takes a belief and a passion and a vision. The Bible says, without vision, the people perish.
That's right. Amen. Amen.
Getting back
for you.
To you, this I should be the guest on my own show. I should do
That's right. You could do that.
Now, this last segment, I want to reserve for you and what you do. But go ahead. What were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say, one of the things you probably need to do sometimes is maybe once a month is just have it there. It's just Dave giving his suggestions, his wisdom, sharing his wisdom. Your audience probably wants to hear more Dave.
You think?
I think
about that. I'll see if the cards and letters coming in support that. Now, you are an amazing person, Marianne, and you have managed to turn your life around from what it was. And I'm sure people come up to you all the time and say, how can I be you? Because I want to be you when I grow up. What practices do you employ today as far as living a successful and fulfilling life? I mean, this didn't just happen, right? I like to say, because I heard someone, Joyce Meyer, say that if your life is a mess, it took years and years and years of poor decisions to get that way. And if your life is a success, it took years and years and years of right decisions to get that way. And it doesn't say that we don't make wrong decisions, but if you're making more right decisions than wrong decisions, it's gonna weigh more toward the success and vice versa. So go ahead and answer the question if you can, which I know you can.
Well, it is to say it, briefly and clearly and succinctly. That is a little hard because you're right. It does take years to get to certain points in life, and then it takes some time to transform it. And so I don't want to give any quick, easy fixes here. But I have to say that, number one, I really am very persistent. I think believing in getting a picture, and getting in touch with who you are and why you're here is central. For years, I didn't quite understand what that was, who I was, and I didn't even accept who I was. There were a lot of parts of me that rejected me, didn't mm-hmm. like me. And I think that the number one thing that sounds like you saw, it sounds like the least humble thing I could possibly say, but I like me. I love me, yeah. I like me, and I've really taken on God's view of me, and I've figured out what that is.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. You know, if he's delighted with me, why shouldn't I be?
That's right.
And so that was a big step for me. We didn't talk about this, but I come from sexual abuse. I was sexually abused as a child. I was discriminated against being the only Asian family in a whole white culture, you know, upstate New York mm-hmm. during the Korean War and being Korean. That was fun. there was the whole issue of my parents getting divorced when, at a time when that was just hardly anybody got divorced in those days, especially in my community. So there was a lot of issues that made me feel like I was less than. And I carried that forward. And always trying to prove something, trying to be somebody. And it causes people to be, when they have that mindset like me, it causes you to achieve a lot because you're so motivated by that. Mm-hmm. But after a while, you know, I needed to get to a place in life where I felt like if I don't lift a finger, if I don't do one more thing for anyone, if I don't achieve one more great thing, that I am still A-okay just as I am. And that
yeah.
God loves me just as I am. And I'm going to get blessed just the same. It's like you were talking about before. So
mm-hmm.
the practice of loving yourself, accepting who you are, embracing your gifts and your talents, and the more you operate in the gifts and talents that God's given to you, the happier you're going to be. And that's what I did. So
and that's so important, liking yourself. I like myself. A lot of people don't. They don't like
mm-hmm.
who they are. They want to change who they are, but, you know, God made you, and it does take a lifetime of right decisions to change your life. But you know what? Either you're going to be going down the right road or you're going to be going down the wrong road. You know, changing direction in your life is important. At least you're going in the right direction, and you're getting closer and closer to your goals, closer and closer to your success, etc. So don't be impatient. You will get there. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you and I
mm-hmm.
are in our 60s, and I don't know about you, but yesterday, Marianne, I was 18.
Of course.
Don't know where the time went. It went that fast. So
yes,
for
yes.
you guys who are saying, oh, no, you know, one time this guy came to me and says, you know, I'm 32 and I'm thinking about going to law school, but I don't know, I'm kind of old. And I says, well, how old will you be in 4 years? He goes, 36.
Yeah.
And how old will you be if you don't go to law school in 4 years? He says, 36. I says,
Yeah, and I think that's another mindset thing because I'm sure you share the same perspective. I don't think I'm too old for almost anything except – Well, I'm trying to think of what I might say except too, but I'm not going to even say that. You know, anything I really want to do, there's still plenty of time to do it. And if I start thinking that, and this is what happened when I was 50 years old, I went through a massive depression because I was sick all the time. I had major, major health issues,
really?
Migraines all the time. Yes. You name it. I was in and out of the hospital. And most of it was actually just stress and what I believed about myself, about God, about life, everything. My belief system was all messed up. And a lot of it was because I was a Christian for so long and all some of the teachings that you get in church are
yeah.
just like whacked. But anyway, I had become really messed up. And my body now, I had once been very healthy and now my body was just like, and so what I thought was, all right, I'm 50. This is just a downhill slide. This is what I get to look forward to. And, oh, my gosh, I just slumped into this bad depression over that one. So I needed a whole new mindset about aging and where I was going. I had to get the vision. I had to figure out who I was, what my gifts were, what my talents were, what was easy for me and what was hard, what I needed to do and what I didn't need to do. So there was this kind of this whole reassessing of my life. But I like this term that God gave me one day. It's called focused integration. It sounds kind of heady, but focused integration, where I focused in on integrating all the parts of my life from childhood right on up through my mid-50s. And all things I saw as useful, where before I used to think I spotted all the failures. Well, that didn't work out, and that didn't work out. And look at you messed that up. But I got to a point where I stopped. I focused on it all being success, and that changed everything. And it's just has opened all kinds of doors. So not a quick answer, I know, but it carries me today.
And what help do you get from others? What help do you receive from others? Or do you do it all by yourself?
No. I actually have spent, I've spent tens and tens and tens of thousands of dollars on coaching, where, you know,
I mean,
other
people's coaching.
Yeah, people coaching me. Yes. I invested very heavily into myself and my work and learning the things that I do naturally today. I, at one time, didn't have a clue how to do. And so as smart as I was, you know, I didn't have it all. And God, actually, I had to get to a point of actually saying to the Lord, because I was spending money like crazy. I mean, just crazy spending money. And I eventually went to the Lord and said, you tell me now what program I should do next, what coach I should employ next. You know, and I started to get very strategic.
And did he?
And, yes, absolutely, absolutely. So those are other things that I've done where, you know, I'm part of the same mastermind group you're in, you know?
Yes.
Craig Dustball's mastermind group.
Best thing I ever did.
Fun, too, isn't it?
It is. The people that I meet there are just amazing. I mean, if you want to surround yourself by people more successful than yourself, and I don't mean just financial success, you must join Craig Dustwall's mastermind group. And it's coming up, what's the date? September something.
18th. September 18th in L.A.
Yes, in L.A. So I'll throw in a shameless plug for Craig. CraigDustwall.com, D-U-S-W-A-L-T. And you won't be disappointed. In fact, he is the catalyst that caused me to write my first book in 30 days and then my second book in 30 days. And now I'm working on my third book, which is taking 2 years because a major publisher could be interested in it. I have an agent who is interested in pitching it to them. So all because of Craig and his mastermind. So, so in the last few minutes of the show, Marianne, please tell me about any upcoming events, how people can contact you. And let me just throw in a shameless plug for Marianne. I went to her website, and I saw this thing on her website that said, free quiz. Well, you know me. I love free things. So I took this free quiz. Somehow she managed to get my name and my email out of me, but that's okay. And I took this quiz, and it said that I rated pretty high. And then it said, would you like to attend one of her sessions? And I just left it blank. I says, we'll see. And it wouldn't let me. I had to say a yes or a no. So I said yes. And I have learned so much from you, Marianne, just from this hour, that I just might take one of your seminars. I know I would learn a lot.
Well, thank you. You did attend, actually, one of the many breakout sessions at Craig's when I
was
doing.
That's true.
And I
thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thank you.
I took so many notes in there. Just good stuff.
Well, those mini breakout sessions that I've done in the mastermind groups, I'm actually been asked a number of times to, could I do a one-day workshop where we have a little longer time to process through some of that. So it's September 27th in Newport Beach, right across from the John Wayne Airport. I am doing my Beliefs to Results workshop. And what we're going to do there is that we're going to whatever results, and it could be tangible or intangible, it really doesn't matter. It works for both. that you may be stuck on or something you're trying to achieve or you're having a little difficulty getting to the next step. It could be in your business. It could be in your personal life. We're going to work with a small group of people, and you're going to actually, it's going to be very interactive, and you're going to actually break through. You will have a breakthrough. Whatever anybody comes to that, they will have a breakthrough. They will be able to see how the